This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WAFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial. And we've, over the last few months, been dealing with various aspects of not-for-profit organizations going from the basement with a coffee cup and a donut to a very organized group. It goes from that to two or three or more, and in the long run might have a bed sheet of interested board members or participants and a large membership. We've been moving from a somewhat amorphous body. We've over the years spun off other groups or encouraged other groups or sometimes retained them ourselves, like Heartland Pathways. And it's a variety of things. It's not one size fits all. At the moment, we're dealing with Heartland Pathways, and we have several situations that might be of interest to you because you might have to do the same sort of thing yourself sometimes. It's not easy, well, it is easy to create a not-for-profit organization, but it's hard to keep it going, especially if you have to have volunteers who are not necessarily doing jobs, but have enough knowledge to know what it is. I was working with a railroad engineer the other day, and he is looking for volunteers. But they really have to be people who know how to put in a railroad tie safely. And it's the same for us. We have seed picking where you can have do it work. Even then you have to be careful what seeds you pick and how you pick them and how you mix them. So it's not always easy to gather up people who will continue. I think the Grand Prairie Friends is down at Warbler Woods today. I think it's their last volunteer day, but they get a lot of volunteers and they're well organized, and that's the nth degree of what we aim at. But whenever you are a group that is multi-dimensional, You tend to spin off the groups that might be go to a forest preserve or a natural area or a group that's more specialized and able to concentrate on a prairie or whatever. So then when that happens, you're left with a body politic of situations where you're not quite sure that you can spin off. A typical one is one in between Rantoul and Paxton, where we would like to have a prairie trail on an old Route 45 hidden in the bushes. It's concrete with an extra wide roadside, which includes that Route 45. Plus an interurban. We have to know about it. That means it's fairly important to case the area out, to see what plants you do have. Remnant prairies don't always have 110 species. They might have 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 or 50. But you need to know. You need to know your plants so that some plants will take over. We planted a cumbers plant, and cumbers plant does very well. We've also transplanted a cumbers plant, but it can take over. So you have to know that, and that means you don't put a lot of cumbers plants in your seed. you have to know that if you're putting in a mixed seating, that you don't all have all the very small seeds dropping to the bottom of the box. What we do is, if we're planting a mixed seeding, you have to know whether you're going to be taking prairie in the fall. That means you're going to have you're going to sow a fall prairie. You're not going to have pussy toes and early spring plants like hyacinth or starry-eyed grass. So we tend to put our seed together in jars so that we know what plant we're planting. And then if you're doing a planting, you might want to know what soil you have. If you're on farmland, you might have to know that all the humus, the top 6 inches of humus and the top 4 feet of area where fibrous roots go, might not be there anymore if you've farmed it for 100 years, but you can still get the prairie to grow. It will require you to know your soils, which soils are sandy and going to retain more soil self-fertilizer. You're going to have to know whether tap roots are going down. You have to know whether you're going to try and encourage a forest. If you're out in the open, the prairie will have will take up the water that the forest may need. So whatever agency you're putting together, you have to know their people, know their interests, and that might not even be possible, because it takes a while to understand each other. Talking to each other is helpful. It helps you understand the task involved, and it might take a while to figure out whether the person coming is going to come for one session per year or be involved every weekend. And you look for people who might have a botanical commitment or an engineering commitment. But we're in short supply of people who have a knowledge of the organization. WEFT has to deal with electronics. And so you get a few people who are able to work on electronics. So not every amateur can come in and do that. So again, there's a need for educated, committed volunteers. And you need someone in charge who can bring those people together with tasks you have. And if the radio video equipment breaks down, then you have someone who can sort it out and even open up the computer and put in an extra chip. So what I'm trying to say is this: you can create a not-for-profit organization, but it's a lot of work to keep it going. And WEFT has, over the years, 40 years, done very well at that. Not always on the same wavelengths. Sometimes different experts will have different ideas. We have that in prairie preservation especially. So it's a matter of looking at sowing a prairie, and you can sow a prairie into Kentucky bluegrass and bromgrass and fescue, and the seed will stay there. And if it's prairie seed, it might be that in 200 years it will grow. It will germinate. It might be landing high on a plant, so you perhaps need to have the area mown so the seed will fall. You have to either vernalize it or use native situations where you get a cold treatment during winter, and then you need to stimulate it to growing. That means you, vernalization means that you can simulate that cold period by putting the seed into a refrigerator at about 34 degrees somewhere in there, and give it a chance to think it's going through winter. And then you have to pull it out and germinate it. But if you're going to put it in a greenhouse and grow it, you have to be able to have pots that are deep for deep-rooted plants that first of all grow roots and then later grow cotyledons and leaves. They're very small. So there's some controversy about that, but I try to explain that prairie plants do very well on hard, unfertilized soil. Weeds grow on fertilized soil that is disturbed. So if you don't want to encourage your weeds, you sow your seed in a very gently cultivated site, and then you roll it. If you have a small site in your backyard, you get your feet and you pound it down with your feet. You can have a board on the end of a pole and you can harden the soil that way. Or you can, if it's a slightly larger plot and you have access to it with a car or a pickup truck, you roll your tire over it, and that's very helpful. It allows the seed to communicate with the soil, have soil around it. You might want to water sometime, you're in effect encouraging the seed to germinate earlier. In nature, the plants often have a seed that will germinate quickly and some that will germinate so slowly. So if you leave it to nature, leave it with the inflorescence, leave it with a lot of seed in the one place, then you risk having to do it like nature. So if nature wants to last 100 years before it germinates, then you've got it. But in many cases, we're planting areas we'd like to have some instant gratification. It's axiomatic that if you're going to recreate a prairie with its bacteria and fungi, you're going to have to be around for 200 years. So you have to imagine what it will be like, because it might not express itself in 10 or 15 or 20 years. You also have to know it's used to being a lightning strike to provide fire, or native populations would know that the prairie would improve if it was fired, and they could also use it to capture animals that would come out of the prairie. So firing is important, to the point that many people will take hay and add to a prairie that doesn't have enough fire matrix to fire it, but some seed gets burst with that fire. So we're in that game, and we are pushing Heartland Pathways along a little bit further with projects that aren't quite there yet. We're talking about that prairie corridor between Round Hill and Paxton, for instance, and that's communicating with the Department of Transportation that owns the roadside, Department of Natural Resources, which needs to know what's going on, the botanists who know that it's on goes up and over a moraine, and you want to know the species that's there and where are the niches, and you need to know what the water situation is. This is there is an outwash plain, and that is very swampy. So early settlers had to drain it, but we have a little creek running through Poke Prairie at Rantoul, and it's sort of doing a natural thing. But we would, a lot of our prairie is on a burrow pit, so that's on a gravel pit. So we're going back to like 10,000 years ago and taking the plants and dipsy-doodling them in from an adjacent remnant. And there's a gravel pit had edges around that weren't worked. And there's an interurban nearby that has a good prairie on it. So we're at a crisis at the moment. We've done a lot of this over the years. We've accumulated a lot of tools, and yes, we can have 50 students at once, but we don't have a lot of that. We need people who know. There's a lot of fear about spot herbiciding, but some plants like teasel are very hard to control without the aid of herbicide, and that we don't like. We have debates about that. Ameren is a power company, and it has to concern itself with power lines shorting to trees, so we have to remove trees. Then where do you put the tree is a good question. If you're going to have EPA put gravel on the top of an abandoned railroad, you're going to have to say, excuse me, but please don't take out the prairie that's on either side of the ballast. But that happens, especially when there's an embankment and riprap is put down the side. So just so that any leftover creosote from preserved railroad ties doesn't creep down the side. So it's to the benefit of people. But if you're down to 0.01% of the prairie, what do we have left? We have farmers who've taken over the rich prairie soils, and the only place we have left is on cemeteries that have been retained and railroad beds. So that's why we get involved with that. So we have a somewhat of an emergency at the moment, because we have a storefront downtown next to WEFT. WEFT has been very helpful. We broadcast over WEFT, and we're in many ways friends and relatives. We run in and out of each other's building, but we've not upgraded our building in many years, and development is coming around us. And that development is called gentrification. It's upgrading. So we have a beer garden across the way that's replaced up Pocket Prairie, and it's doing very well, and it's very popular, and we have music outside. But our building doesn't meet code specifications. So we have to upgrade the building. The front facade has to be cut pointed. The windows at the back have to be improved, because over the years they've broken down. Various things have to be improved, and the city has tolerated us some, but it is axiomatic that we're a fire hazard and a safety hazard if we don't meet codes that have been sorted out. So that is a challenge for us at the moment. But at the same time, fairly suddenly, we have to escape have a warehouse at Bonneville. And it's just a little outside of town, so it's a little further than we would like to be able to get to it. But from an art point of view, it's just a little bit out of town if people are going to visit you and buy prints or exhibit some of their work. But we've lost it to a purchase. The whole building complex has been purchased, and We rent just part of it, and it's been very helpful. We've had a master's degree candidate in planning there who created sculpted pieces and used a little crane that we brought in to put a sculpted piece of note of wood that is what we've saved off a demolished elevator. So we have a lot of materials to evacuate at Bonneville, PACA, and Preservation and Conservation Association, with several members, has come, and they've taken things that we've saved, which are a little bit better than what you might want to send to a secondhand store. And it might be what PACA sells or uses. It might be a little on the historic side. It might be a plow with so that you can explain a plow share that has to be sharpened by a blacksmith every once in a while. It's how you plowed the ground early in the 1850s or even the 1830s. You had to have a plow. It might be a bilge pump where you have a pump that lifts water out of a wet situation and it puts it into a drain. It might be a boat that's shipping in water and you want to get rid of that water so that the boat survives and floats. It might be just a piece of interesting wood. It perhaps goes to the idea store or to Habitat, which is more pragmatic and mainly wants things that can be used here and now, and perhaps to augment their houses that they're building for low-income people. It might be that we are looking to a historic museum. I just have been talking to the city because we have sitting in our front storefront on Market Street, a glyph. And this is part of a Oddfellows building where you have the men on the upper floor, the women, the Rebeccas, on that floor below. And below that, you have a street shop where Weft actually occupied for a while before they became Weft on Market Street. Yeah. But part of that Weft establishment was a glyph. It was cast iron, but it was also, excuse me, telephones are extremely helpful, but sometimes they can be a menace. So coming back to that, talking to the city, we would like to see that glyph go to a historic museum. And T.J. Blakeman is the president of the museum, and he is interested in this glyph that was not only probably about a 10 feet long piece of cast iron, but it's also a functional piece to the building to hold the building up. And when the Oddfellows building was removed from near the city building, I knew enough to try and preserve the dignity of this piece of vernacular art. It has a eye of God looking over the constituency. It has a crook and a shield that more or less says you can be friendly and you can be determined. So that has character. There's a tent with the door open and you're welcome in. It has a bunch of faggots, a little bundle of sticks, and it's a symbol that might get put on your doorstep if you don't treat your family right, or you go drinking too much or what have you. It has various connotations, friendly and unfriendly, but it's there. These are all in three dimensions. The dimensional images, if you're a collector of folk art, you probably could send this, saw each image up and sell it in New York for a small fortune. But this is our history here. And the question is, where should this go? It's axiomatic, if you only have a small museum, you can't collect things that are too big to go in the museum. So this may or may not have a home in the Cattle Bank, which is a local historic museum. But T.J. Blakeman knew the site and actually could pull up a picture and see the images that I was talking about. And so we have that sort of equipment. It means that you're combining many fields. You're an artist or a historian or a geologist or a biologist or a trail person, and you have a little of these things. So you have to know as you go on into the future, do you need to do this sort of thing, or is that superfluous? So as different generations look at things, you are going to have a different interpretation. We hope that some of the elements will stay, they won't be just thrown out. We have to think about climate. We have to know that the prairie is very dependent on climate. The winds that blow from the west and the winds that come up from the Gulf and create a cold front and a warm front, and then they collide and you get tornadoes. And the prairie responds to this. It can accept that trauma in a manner that forests can't do very easily. So it's important that we have these species, that we have the biochemistry that's in there. So we're at the stage where we would invite you to come to Bonneville to see and help us recycle wood, for instance. We took a lot of wood out of the Staley elevator, which was taken down. We took it down in blocks, four or five. You have to know that a wooden elevator would start off with 10 by 2s and 8 by 2s and 4 by 2s. So you had a very heavy wall that would not burst with the weight of grain. And you had a little elevator which would take one person up to the top, where you could load it in various bins so that it didn't fall over. You have to know that prairie soil is often very deep and friable, and if you load on one side only, your elevator is going to fall over. And it has happened and does happen, so you have to be careful with that. We're sort of sorting out who we are and what we are and where we go in the future. And one of the things that is important is, do we have a warehouse and do we have a workshop? It's almost axiomatic that if you're going to work with people, you have to have workshops. Grand Prairie Friends has that at Warbler Woods, and they just acquired another building. I think it's a house and a barn. And it's very helpful to have that sort of site, especially if you have wet weather or you need to do indoor things rather than outdoor things. So the question is, do we find another site for a warehouse? You can't do it quickly. You have to mosey around and find a place that's not too far out of town. And it's possible that you want some part of it heated, because things like slides and photographs and paper and silkscreen prints don't tolerate general open storage. So, and then it's costly to do that. And where does the support money come from? And so at the moment, we have more than we can handle. We've been in the Lincoln Building, so some of that has gone to Bonneville. We took out last night a whole set of nature information. There was guides to birds and fungi and other creatures. So there's a there's history in Frank Lloyd Wright, and so you have to balance. Perhaps the storefront we own in downtown Champaign becomes a center more for a library, not a warehouse with tools in the front, which is kind of embarrassing to a development. So we take out the things we work with. So where would you find, if there's someone from Thomasboro that knows us well, there might be a barn or a shed that we might use. And at the moment, we have a lot of people that have been helping us. And if you want to come out and be curious, we would enjoy to have you come just to be curious or to work. This morning we're thinking of moving cardboard. It would be our silk screens were supported with cardboard, and they have to be backed with cardboard. It's not the best backing because it's heavy in acid and can rot your silk screens. But these days you buy archival corrugated styrofoam. It's kind of plastic, but it is more acceptable than cardboard. Even cardboard is, we wouldn't have silk screens out there without that cardboard, but we have a lot of it stored and some of it has to go out. So that's in the process. You go to Max and you take your truckload of cardboard. It's kind of sad to see that sort of work go to waste, but the era has changed. We're on internet now and we don't need quite so much pictures that would help you to know and understand an area. We're looking at mowers. We keep mowers because we're not mower fiends. We're mower people that mow a small amount and make a statement. So we gather up old heavy-duty mowers that have a one blade. They're like a bush hog mower, very dangerous, but they allow us to make a statement so that we don't get a 15-foot mower running over things and destroying and mowing at the wrong time of the year. If we make a statement that makes things look neat, neatness is godliness, and prairies don't behave like that. They're more rambunctious. They do their own things. Certain plants will have underground rhizomes. They will communicate with each other. We know that there are associates. And sometimes there's an insect that pollinates that if you don't have it, you don't have the plant. So do we need to keep mowers? We have a lot of our equipment is kind of old. We survive on limited funds, so it might be that sort of equipment can go to someone who repairs and works with mowers. We also need a mower to cut down weeds. If you allow your prairie to grow, it grows very, very slowly and the tops grow slowly. So if you have weeds and they come in spring and they're 4 feet high, then you can mow across the top of the prairie plants because they're very low. And so if you adjust the mower to a height that takes the weeds out, then you wait till May or later and wait till they're almost seeding, and then you cut them out and you don't have a seed pool of weeds in your prairie. So we have several uses for mowers, and we have use for volunteers who work with mowers and repairs mowers. And you're in a country that doesn't do a lot of repairs, so you have somebody standing off saying, this is a bunch of crap, just go and buy another mower. It doesn't work that way. People who don't have much money store things that they may be able to use. One of our mowers is set up so that it can run a saw and other equipment. You're using the motor. So it's not only for mowing. So we're at that, and we should let you know where Bonneville is. It's on Route 10. That's the extension of Springfield Avenue. And you keep going for about 7 miles, and you'll come to Bonneville. You recognize Bonneville as a small community town, which is almost joining Champaign on the west. And it's the main street of Bonneville is a church and a fire station, a church on the north side of the road, a fire station on the south side. And that's an indication that you're almost to where we are. And if you go another best part of a third of a mile, and you'll come to a very big, I'd call it a tin building. It's corrugated iron, a lot of it. And it has a storefront look to it, but it's a very big facility. And it's, I don't know what it's going to be as a factory, but it's bought in as a complete unit. We have been paying by the month, so we're more likely to be candidates for getting out quickly because we don't have a long-term lease. There are other people who are there that will be there till April because probably they have a longer lease, a more formal lease, and perhaps even a higher rental figure. We're thinking to get most of the things that we might need in the future. We hope to do a warehouse, but the future generations may not want a warehouse. You can't have a little Kmart barn on every prairie. It's only going to be vandalized anyway. You can have facilities like that. If we're going to think about 30 miles coming in from Bloomington to Mansfield, it would be a rail trail which has got segments of good prairie on it. Need perhaps something in that area where we can have a dunghill to work from. The Champaign, Havana and Western Historic Railroad, which is hoping to get Monticello Railroad Museum trains into Champaign, is faced with the same problem. If they're going to get railroad ties and stick rail, then we're re-railing 4 miles of Hutland Passways, abandoned railroad bed. That's very essential to have a warehouse at that spot. At White Heath is one end, so that's where you store railroad that you find and look for. That's where you store go-karts that you might have picked up here and there, and we've been into that. So we're working with an easement for the Champaign, Havana and Western Railroad, and we do have that. The Railroad Museum this weekend, I think, is doing an event which is, forgetting the name of it, but it's an event each year where people encounter, it's sort of snow days. We don't have a lot of snow, but it's before there is a the holiday era, the months that are going towards Christmas, and I may think of the name of it, but you need, if you're going to do railroading stuff, you're going to have railroad sheds. A lot of decision making in some of these things. The railroad at one stage was a one car near the post office in Champaign, and it has now a national level railroad museum, and it could go down to Shady Rest. So you don't bother railroad administrators this week, because they're all out there with the event that's on today. And it's popular. The young folk especially have never ridden on a train. They've ridden on a plane, but not so much a train. And these range from steam with big power wheels to diesel motors that have several bogies that spread the weight in a different fashion. So you, each time you have to learn a little bit about what you're doing. They use square mouth shovels rather than round mouth shovels, because they have to put gravel under the railroad ties, and they have to be tamped, and you have to know how they do this. We had a dog, and a dog is where you lift on either side, with a person on either side, the rail. It's a clamp that goes onto the rail, and you might have 10 people lined up doing that, five on either side, it might be more, and you have a song, and the foreman will sing that song, and at a certain point you'll all lift at the same time, and amazingly you can move it at an eighth of an inch or 3 feet if you want, and that you have to learn, and you have to have some experience of it, have some excitement of it, and so being a prairie nut is the same sort of thing. One has to put things on mute. So we have two big crises at the moment, and you have to figure how we get around it. One is the upgrade of the Hutland Pathways building downtown. So we stay around when the things get up. There's an anticipation of putting in a $250 million ice rink and building, so that there's a site that's big enough to attract fairly large venues. And then you're going to have people walking around. And it's interesting to have your prairie in that location and not in the boondocks. So we have to care for the building downtown. And we have to evacuate the building on the warehouse at Bonneville. So we're getting to have liberated a lot of material. Sometimes there's lockers. Packer has had so many lockers lately. The high schools and others being remodeled. But those lockers are good for storage. So we are hoping to have on the 27th an open house, which will be free for people to come and take donations. Might be wood. We have lots of wood. I hate to get rid of wood. I don't like to see it burned. I would just as soon see it rot and create humus. We have to think about using wood and reusing wood. So that wood from the elevator was a yellow pine, came from the Staley elevator, which is now gone, but we took segments of it and took wedges and crowbars and separated out decent wood. It's got nails in it, we remove the nails. And so there's wood that might be useful. Some of it has gone already to people who can use. It might be that if you're starting a new natural area, I have to get hold of the Grand Prairie Friends, for instance, they might be able to use some of the materials. If not, we're going to have to break down some of the useful materials and send them to the landfill. That's interesting. One 10 by 10 hopper can cost you $450. And if you can fill it up in no time, if there are things that are obsolete. I've gotten given tents. Old tents were humongously heavy. You put up a tent, it was serious business. And not a lightweight tent you have to sleep in today. But they are obsolete, and we can do nothing other than recycle them. They're canvas, so they will rot in the landfill. We have elements of steel that are obsolete pieces of equipment. And it's almost wonderful to get together and say, what is this? It's the sort of thing you might put, you have to pay 10 cents and guess what this is. So we save things that like that, and the packer saves things like that. So you're welcome to come out on the 27th. That'll be a couple of days after Thanksgiving. And it's not the best day because people will go for, if you're going to go to Massachusetts for the Thanksgiving, you don't go for one day. So some of our helpers are going places for the Thanksgiving. So on the 27th, it'll be freebie. And some of our stuff that we would want for future, we have squirreled away in people's barns. And we're looking for a warehouse, if it is appropriate, and a warehouse where you can find it. I've been looking at Rantoul, which is, they got an Air Force base, which has had Air Force buildings that could be used, perhaps. So I'm looking at one building there. We look to Danville area, where you have the Kickapoo Trail, and we have an interest in an area between Oakwood and Bronson, which we would like to see preserved as nature. We don't know what a prairie was like. We need to preserve those things to even have an imagination of what we expect to create as a prairie. We have so little left. So something over in the Danville Oakwood area might be interesting. It's on the Salt Fork River and the Middle Fork of the Vermilion. Yeah, it might be meant south of Monticello, where we have had someone come from there that might be interested in the mowers, and we'll tinker with mowers and make them work. It might be around by Allerton Park. We don't know, and we're sometimes very dependent on local people who have facilities. But come out, we're in need of funds as well as the movement of things. Buildings don't run without some support for heat and electricity and water and our continuing activities. We think we're justified in staying afloat because some of the things that we've been interested in and we're initiating in some way or another aren't ready to decide to do something. And so you have stakeholders that are thinking about it, it takes a while. The prairie trail to Paxton, for instance, is loaded. The old road is old 45, which is hidden in the bushes, except at several places it's loaded with gravel, and it's used for doing oil and chip for roadsides. So that's where you might have 10 or 12 vehicles coming in and getting loaded and providing a Barber Green machine with gravel to go with asphalt and surface country roads. They might be able to do 6 miles a day. So they have this movement. So if you're going to use the old road, then you have to work with the Department of Transportation that has its objectives. And we also would like to look at a 5-acre piece of land which could augment the 10 acres of Pope Prairie that we have. The new road, which is still being used, goes out around the cemetery. So there's a triangle to the north and a triangle to the south. The triangle to the south is wet, just like Champaign County was in the past. And that wetness would give us a spectrum from wet to very dry on the top of the moraine. And that would be wonderful to work with. And there's a connection with an east-west railroad bed. So come and look and see what we might be into. And often it's inspirational. We need other people who are like the Grand Prairie Friends, who specialize in a certain aspect of what we do. We were moving books last night at Bonneville, and there's an eclectic library there, and you have to wonder, some people wonder why we buy our railroad beds. Well, there wouldn't be any remnant prairie if there wasn't railroad lines and dead cemeteries. So people who are specializing in planting prairie need to know that railroads are very helpful. The Kickapoo Trail, for instance, helpful. If it's not so wide that it takes out the prairie. So between Ogden and Fithian and Oakwood, there's good prairie. We don't want a super wide corridor that has corn and soybeans on the side. We want the nature. We want the square elevator at Rumpler. We want the elevator at Route 9 that demonstrates what our industry is. It's commodities. And what do you think about commodities of corn and soybeans and wheat and perhaps some more different crops like marijuana is being produced at the moment, and it's also a plant that has fiber in it, and so we're looking at different ways of agriculture, and we encourage you to be doing that, whether you do it with groups like the Grand Prairie Friends or with ourselves as a little bit more on the rough and tough side and with ideas and like putting together the idea of a Kickapoo Trail and with the Kickapoo State Park at one end. And we might ask questions. At the moment, we ask questions about buying wood from the Amazon. Here we are with a conference in Scotland, dealing with climate and begging Brazil to not mess up the rainforests. But I remember the day when in Australia, where I grew up, where next to a rainforest, and one of the ways of getting rid of the forest and putting it into agricultural land was to put a notch in 30 trees, and those 30 trees would, in a storm, fall over and domino effect would release a whole bunch of open space that might be two square miles. And you go in and you take the trees that you want for coach wood and very dense trees. But it's in for a dig for the U.S. to be going to the rainforest to take wood. We have our own Osage orange trees that are very dense, and they can be preserved too. They can be boards that would stay in a trail on a bridge for 100 years. So you have to think about these things. Sometimes we have the liberty to perhaps remind people to do things, and that's interesting and helpful. Doesn't always get us a friendly response, because we do it differently. We can pay for a new one. I would like to see PACA with a repair unit that would take some of the old things. And actually, the computer people are being asked at the federal level, at the international level, to make their equipment a little more available so that you can open up the cell phone and actually repair it yourself. It hasn't been. It mostly you throw away hundreds and hundreds of typewriters and cell phones, and that's not good for the environment. So you have to think about that. You have to think about what you're eating and how many miles did it come from Peru and or Africa or Asia. Who pays for that equipment to roll across the oceans in ships that are disturbing the whales and the dolphins and the creatures that are in the oceans? How can we live modestly is a good question. So if you're around, we'll be at Bonneville and moving and shaking stuff on a regular basis. But we'll also, on the 27th, there'll be some freebies. And we will still have 3 days to get out. After that, it might be that you come with a strong arm and help us list, and some of it will go to the recycling centers, or some of it will go to the landfill. Not very much to the landfill. It's surprising. Most of our materials are recyclable, whether they're an old Stanley plane or something more modern. So some things go, the kitchen recycling sort of things can go to the habitat, and some things can go to Goodwill, and some things can go to PACA, the Preservation and Conservation Association. Well, I think we've been talking about this. If you would like to help, we appreciate it. Just understand that this is one of those dimensions that we have to deal with if we're going to do community nonprofit situation things. This is Dave Monk, the Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1. on your FM dial. I'll give you my phone number in case you want to communicate with us and help us. It's 217-840-1911. If you didn't have a pencil, I'll repeat it again. 217-840-1911. And we'll get hold of you if you leave a message. If we're not able to communicate right immediately. So thank you. This is WEFT, and it's the 40th year, and I'm rather proud of WEFT as a not-for-profit agency, and its music is wonderful. And so listen to Weft and enjoy. This is Dave Monk again, the Prairie Monk. Bye.
It's WEFT Channel.